Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Adi Oladipo here. Thank you so much for downloading Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're here every single Tuesday live on TalkSport 2, myself and the great Gareth A. Davis. If you can't join us live, remember to subscribe to the Fight Night podcast channel. So much other great content there as well, such as Fight Night, Fight of My Life, and even the Mike Tyson story, The Boy from Brownsville.
This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
If you love your boxing and your MMA, then this is obviously the show for you. Fight Night Extra with myself, Adi Oladipo, and the great Gareth A. Davis, where we discuss all the latest from the world of combat sports. Today, look, we're going to be recapping a historic night of boxing as Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano put on an event for the ages in front of a sold-out crowd in Madison Square Garden. We'll discuss the magnitude of the event that both myself and Gareth were lucky to be at in person, and what next for both women as well. Is the only option now a stadium fight in Dublin, as discussed? We'll talk about that. Elsewhere, we are going to look at a comfortable win for Shakur Stevenson over Oscar Valdedric. Saw him unify the super featherweight division. We'll recap what that win and where the performance, more importantly, put Stevenson on the pound for pound. Surely he's cracked the top 10 now. And we'll be looking ahead to a huge fight this weekend as Canelo Alvarez returns to the light heavyweight division. He faces the unbeaten champion Dimitri Bivol in Las Vegas on Saturday night. Look, don't go anywhere. This is Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2.
Literally have the homecoming fight. I would take it the easiest possible of the top 10 and just say, this is how I'm going out on a nice high with a nice knockout win in 20 seconds. Thank you everyone for your support. I've had a fantastic game.
It is all over, Dimitri Bivol.
I think it's all over right here. And referee Kenny Bayliss in the sixth round. The fight is all over. Huge right hand from Canelo.
And now the WBC, WBO and Ring Magazine Junior Lightweight Champion of the World, Shakur Stevenson!
Gareth, wow. We were both there ringside on Saturday night. Look, every time I feel like a fight of this magnitude happens, and we've had quite a few in the last couple of years, I always ask you, where does it kind of rank? And, you know, you being ringside to watch all these fights over the years, where'd you put that one, Gareth? Because a lot of people ringside, a lot of big boxers, people I spoke to, Steve Bunsen, Barry Jones, and they said that's one of the greatest things they've ever seen.
Yeah, totally there with that. The magnitude of it, you know, it registers in your body in a weird way. I felt all I felt a kind of incredible adrenaline surge during the fight and an exhaustion. It's like your body is led afterwards, but you're wired. But you're still wired and you're buzzing. Incredible atmosphere. It built through the night. Taylor and Serrano utterly delivered. It's probably one of the greatest nights I've ever witnessed, and definitely the greatest women's fight I've ever seen. And, you know, it delivered for many reasons. And one is that Katie Taylor was brilliant early on in the fight, was nearly knocked out in the fifth round, so close to being knocked out, yet recovered to fight Serrano's fight and then make it her own again. And, no, it's just extraordinary. And just everything about the night, the way that Serrano came in, the way the Puerto Rican fans were, the way that there was almost a slow walk, almost a funereal walk to the ring, Katie Taylor, really taking it all in, looking around her as if this was her last moment of breath. It was just incredible. It delivered to, in terms of all the hype it had been given, in terms of first ever women's fight to headline at Madison Square Garden, the people like Billie Jean King getting behind it, Leila Ali, Christy Martin, Congresswoman Vasquez, the names, the WWE joining forces with them, who are now on DAZN. Just the whole push, the women, the two women at the top of the card, these extraordinary two women, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano, absolutely delivered a classic, an instant classic for the ages, which justified all the talk that this was a special moment. I think, and like you say, it's one of the memories that will live with you for the rest of your career, Addy, and it certainly will in mine.
Yeah, 100%. I echo all of that. And just when you kind of, you mentioned all the females there as well that were ringside, and it just sort of women empowerment, everything just was so important. You had sort of former fighters, you mentioned Leila Ali and Christy Martin, then you had the new ones, Alicia Baumgartner ringside, Michaela Meyer, Clarissa Shields, Jessica McCaskill. Yeah. And it just felt like the moment where everything just went bang. It reminds me a bit when Adam Smith, when AJ was fighting Klitschko, and he said liftoff. And it felt like this was the big liftoff for this new era of female boxers. And now we want to see all the super fights. We want to see Clarissa Savannah. I want to see Alicia versus Michaela and all the others that could be made as well. And that fifth round, how Katie Taylor got out of that fifth and survived the sixth, I mean, only she will know. Because I was screaming she's going to get knocked out. I was adamant Amanda Serrano was going to knock her out. For her to then not just come back and get through that round, but to come back and win the fight? Wow. Did you have her winning, Gareth? I don't know if you've done it round by round. Did you have her winning?
I did. I did do a round by round. I had Katie Taylor winning 96-94. She had to win the last two rounds for me.
Yeah.
I had them all even going into the last two. But like you say, that fifth round where she was trapped on the ropes, it was a torrid round for her. She was trapped in the Puerto Rican's corner. And it happened a few times during the fight early on when she got trapped in the corner. She trapped in the Puerto Rican's corner. And she took almost a minute of attack, torrid attack, where she covered up, didn't really fire back very much. And then they went to the center of the ring and she was staggering forward in the last 40 seconds. She was so close to being knocked out.
And could that have been a 10-8?
I'd considered that. I actually considered that at the time, scoring it a 10-8. But it was very close to it. I think because someone doesn't go down, you don't score it a 10-8 in boxing. You probably would in mixed martial arts. But you know, to have the tenaciousness to come back afterwards. I mean, they went at it in the sixth round as well. They went at it, you know. But Taylor recovered her composure. No, it was absolutely extraordinary. It had everything apart from they were both down and got up again, and it almost had that. And Serrano as well, physically, what a specimen she is, you know, keep going in the way she did. And I have to say it, and I know we can talk about it in more depth as the show goes on, would three-minute rounds really count against Katie Taylor in women's boxing?
You know? They certainly would. I mean, there's a couple of times there where you're thinking, this goes on for, let's forget a minute, this goes on for another 20 seconds, she's in trouble.
Yeah.
But the 2 minutes almost bring out a sort of a beast in her that can only go for 2 minutes. And I think they make it exciting and then they get a minute rest. It's almost like you're getting a lot here. You're fighting for 2 minutes, but you're getting a minute rest where the men obviously fight for 3 minutes and get a minute rest. And it's almost, it's an interesting discussion. Jake Paul's an interesting character. he done his part to build this up as well, and he deserves his plaudits. And Eddie, and I mean, you were at the weigh-in where the violins kind of brang out Katie's. Oh, those violins, by the way. I mean, how good was that?
It was phenomenal. The whole, to even the atmosphere at the weigh-in set up for something electric. It was, you know, it wasn't the calm before the storm. It was the electricity coming before the storm. It erupted, you know. To have a baying crowd in there for the weigh-in, to have the excitement grow every time it was about Serrano and Taylor, or Taylor and Serrano. It was just, everything was right in the week. And you know, so often in boxing, we see massive hype and promotion and then the fight. And sometimes the fight doesn't deliver. You can go back a week, Tyson Fury and Dillian White. For some people, that fight didn't deliver. It did for me, because I think Fury showed his levels. But it was just extraordinary. The whole week was extraordinary, to be honest.
It certainly was. Look, we're going to recap the fight and what next for both, rematch and where the rematch could happen as well. Jake Paul spoke about the Middle East, which was interesting. We'll talk about that. There was another big fight on Saturday, which is almost, I feel sorry that it almost happened on the same day. And that was Oscar Valdez versus Shakur Stevenson. Unification fight happened right here. I am here in Las Vegas, people. Shakur Stevenson getting the win and showing his brilliance. Again, we'll recap the fight, but Shakur Stevenson showing that we are looking at a potential great here now going forward. And a guy for me that's now cracked the pound for pound top 10 as well.
Absolutely. Look, I've said for a while now that Shakur Stevenson has all the tools in the box. He has everything, he has the intelligence as well, to go on and be the number one pound for pound in the world, to be another Floyd Mayweather, not in the mold of Floyd Mayweather, to be a guy who's seemingly unbeatable in the square circle. You know, when he steps into it, he's so comfortable in the office. He's got so many skills. You know, I nailed my colors to the mast, Daddy, and I said I thought that Shakur would smoke Oscar Valdez. Look, he put him down. He beat him dominantly. And the key is how long he stays at 130 pounds, at super featherweight we're talking about, how soon he goes up to lightweight for these amazing, what I believe are super fights with Vasyl Lomachenko, Tank Davis, Ryan Garcia, George Kambosos, and Devin Haney. I think he could potentially beat them all, even though he's coming up a weight division. He's showing it again and again. I think what he'll try and do is become undisputed, have two more fights at 130 and then move up. But this is a guy who's still very young and improving with every performance. And anyone who is seen as rugged or skilled, he just seems to make boxing look so easy.
He does. He does. Ogawa, I think, is one of the other champions. And look, I mean, I like Ogawa, and you have to give Ogawa credit for being a champion, but he's not living with Shakur Stevenson. He looks so much bigger as well. He looks so much bigger than Valdez, where I was already thinking about him. You mentioned Floyd. I was already thinking 147 is going to be a landing spot. And that's crazy, because he's at 130 now. And I'm already thinking he could fight 17 pounds higher, but I know he can.
Hey, listen, I covered the 8-weight world champion Manny Pacquiao for many years. Floyd went up 5-weight divisions, didn't he, to light middle. So, you know, there's so many... when you've got those skills, as they always say, they pay the bills, or in whatever division you step into, there's a limit, and welterweight probably 147 probably would be his limit. And at that point, and against, you know, the great exponents who are, like you say, a stone and a half heavier naturally than them, or a stone heavier, they do struggle more. But, you know, right now, he looks to be the most talented all-round fighter in the sport. Certainly the coming force. And what is he, 24?
Shakur? 24, 24 years of age.
A baby in still boxing, you know?
He certainly is.
And like, look, things can go wrong on certain nights. Look, there's, as you say, there's Kenichi Ogawa. There's also Roger Gutierrez, the WBA title holder, isn't there? So you don't see those two giving him too much trouble. But the great thing is that if he does that over the next year, he's still learning. You know, he's there with Bo Mack. He's in a great kind of camp situation.
Yeah.
Around the likes of Terence Crawford. He'll probably never fight Terence Crawford, I imagine. I don't see their paths crossing, but he did. He did for Jamel Herring, who was in the same camp, didn't he?
Yeah. So yeah.
Who knows? But yeah, what we saw is, I think, if we saw greatness having emerged in New York, we saw greatness emerging in Las Vegas last weekend, Eddie.
Yeah, and we've certainly got greatness here coming right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in Vegas this weekend, the pound for pound king Canelo Alvarez takes on the unbeaten WBA light heavyweight champion Dimitri Bivol. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but a Canelo fight is almost going under the radar a little bit. It's weird, maybe because we've had these big fights back to back to back to back weekends now, and a Canelo fight coming off the back of what happened in Madison Square Garden. Maybe it will start to build up in the next couple of days, but being here on ground right now, it still feels a bit quiet. But I know it's going to really ramp up in the next couple of days, Gareth.
Well, it's, what is it, Tuesday at 9 in the morning, isn't it, you know, where yeah. you are? Did you have the grand arrivals on the Monday, or is that later on today?
That's later on today.
Yeah, well, listen, I've been there for many Canelo fights, all the way back to his debut, believe it or not, there in Vegas on the undercard, I think it was of a Manny Pacquiao or Floyd Mayweather fight, if memory serves me right, and was there the night where he fought and lost in his only defeat to Floyd Mayweather. He's such a big star.
Yeah.
That there will be people coming in. There'll be people coming in from out of town to see him in the grand arrivals. I think one of the issues here is he's not against a name, is he? You know, we're going to get that fight in September, I think, if he and Gennady Golovkin fight. For me, this is a banana skin fight this weekend for him. Against Dimitri Bivol, who I think he will win, Canelo. I think he's very special. But Bivol is the same size as him, if not a little bigger, a little taller.
Yeah.
But he's a natural 175-pounder. He's not someone that boils down in weight. He's rather like Joshua Boazzi in that way.
Yes.
He's a very strong, natural 12-stone-7 fighter who carries great skills, brilliant amateur pedigree. He won't be intimidated by Canelo Alvarez. This could be a really, really good fight. And the jeopardy, of course, is that it's low risk, it's high risk, low reward for him in this contest. But I think that's the issue with the week, is that Bivol isn't such a big name. But believe me, you wait for the week to build. The Mexicans will be coming in their droves.
Yeah, I can imagine so. We're starting to see them come in already. All right, you're listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2 with DAZN. Remember, stream boxing anytime, anywhere with DAZN.com. Still to come, we are going to be looking ahead to that Canelo versus Bivol fight coming up on Saturday in Las Vegas. And we'll discuss the big win for Chico Stevenson over Oscar Valdez. But up next, look, we have to start with what was a historic night at Madison Square Garden.
I was here. I personally just woke up into the sunset. But I do understand the lure of wanting to fight at home in that big stadium, and she deserves it more than anyone.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fight Night Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, the great Gareth Bay Davis, alongside myself as well. All right, let's try and recap what was an historic night. Saturday, Madison Square Garden sold out. Half the arena Irish, half the arena Puerto Rican. A couple of Englishmen like myself and Gareth chucked in there as well. It was fascinating, Gareth, wasn't it? It really was. And look, we spoke about it earlier. It wasn't just the fight itself. It was the whole week, the whole build-up. You had the WWE female fighters there. You had all the historic previous past greats there from female boxing, the current female greats as well there. Everything was there and it just worked. It really did.
Well, it transcended boxing in the end as an event. As we mentioned in the opener today, you had all these great names from the sport saying, look, this is an amazing moment. We're celebrating the fact that women are, two great women boxers are getting the platform they fully deserve. as I say, Billie Jean King from outside the sport. We had the transcendency of the WWE involved. Becky Lynch. They used all the right things because Jake Paul's involved. You've got the whole YouTuber generation being drawn to it. Becky Lynch, who's a massive star now in WWE, of course, in wrestling, introducing Katie Taylor at the weigh-in. And then, you know, on the night itself, you had a series of decent fights. Gal Alyafai looked good, and he made
almost forgotten work. How good almost that was.
Exactly. Yeah. He looked brilliant on his USA debut, maybe an opponent set up for him in lots of ways. It's great to see him move on. Liam Beefy Smith looked terrific in a great fight with Jesse Vargas, which he really delivered. I thought he would make it rugged for Jesse, and he made it a very difficult night for him. Brilliant victory for him. And, you know, I think we saw with Ellen Sederus and HH Diva, French on Cruz de Zern, that, you know, there are levels in the game, and they are not at the level of the other two women who we're about to speak about. But it was an incredible scrap. Sederus was so brave with a broken nose, bloodied, and she went till the end in that fight and kind of showed that, you know, the HH Diva might be the undisputed super middleweight champion right now, but she's got a kind of progress to make as well. She was hunting with the overhand right all night and not a lot else, occasionally her jab. But that was an intriguing and fascinating fight. And then we had the main event, which was just off the charts. It delivered, as I said earlier. So it was an instant classic, Eddie.
Yeah, you pray for main events like that. And it's good. It's a good point you make in the comparison between Franchon Cruz de Zern and Elon Sederos, who, look, that's an undisputed fight. But the levels between them and Katie Taylor and Serrano, light years, honestly, light years. And I'm happy you mentioned Katie Taylor's walkout as well, because watching it, it was almost all like she was taking it all in, like this is her final fight. It felt like that. And I think Tony said it on broadcast as well, like that walkout made you almost feel like she knows she's about to go into battle with someone. And this could be that. This could be it. This could be the final one for her. In the end, she was like, no. This isn't the final one. There's more left in the tank. Or is there more left in the tank, Gav? Should there be another one? Should she continue? Should she just walk out like this, the biggest female fight of all time, the toughest test ever, Madison Square Garden? Is this enough to say goodbye, good night, see you later?
Well, look, she's 35. She's a lightweight. She's never really kind of gone up in weight or gone down in weight in terms of her body. She's always kept her body as it is. She's 35. She had a very long amateur career. She had a football career before that, of course. 50 caps for Ireland, I think it was.
Yeah, people forget that.
Oh, yeah. And imagine if women were being paid well to do that, she may have never come to boxing. You know, the Olympic gold, that whole, and it, you know, it's a 21 fight unbeaten career over 6 years now. And when you look at that, she's had three or four really hard fights. The two fights with Delphine Passoon, the fight with Tasha Jonas, this fight now, they're all absolute wars over 10 2-minute rounds. And you know, you just wonder at the age of 35 whether there's certainly desire in the tank. But, you know, she's got a certain style. The other girls call it quite amateurish sometimes. You know, it's not a professional style that you want to see her go on and on and on, because she does need her movement. She did use that in the first four rounds until that torrid fifth round when she was nearly knocked out. Serrano, for me, really came to the fore in the middle rounds. And then I thought it was fairly even, then pretty even between the two going into the last two rounds. And Taylor found herself again on this historic night. And I'm not sure she should go on, but there is a massive money fight to be had in Croke Park. I've said it since the Olympics in 2012, Addy, and I think they've made a mistake for the last decade, is that Katie should have turned pro into 2013 and had a fight in Ireland, and she could have fought Minnie Mouse and sold out 70,000 or 80,000 at Croke Park.
Indeed, we'll speak about that. Let's hear from Tony Bailey, obviously part of the broadcast team for The Zone. He was speaking to TalkSport yesterday, and he warned that Katie Taylor shouldn't have the rematch, and said if there is one more fight, it should be an easy fight in Ireland.
if I was here, I'd personally just walk off into the sunset. Laura, I'm not going to lie, but I do understand the lure of wanting to fight at home in that big stadium, and she deserves it more than anyone. So, okay, I would literally have the homecoming fight, and I would have a debut since in the other corner. Because she's got the power to do it. So I would take it the easiest possible of the top 10 and just say, this is how I'm going out on a nice high with a nice knockout win in 20 seconds. Thank you, everyone, for your support. I've had a fantastic journey.
Tony Billy there, speaking to TalkSport yesterday. He's concerned, like a lot of people. I would be concerned about the rematch, if I'm honest with you. Look, I, like you, scored at 96-94. Katie, there were swing rounds. You could have gone the other way to Serrano, maybe even a draw, which would have been maybe more befitting of the fight. But I am a bit concerned seeing her go in against Amanda again, because Amanda hits hard, very, very hard. And I've never seen Katie hit like that, even against Delphine Passoon or Lina Dartu that hit her quite hard. If there was a rematch, although Katie Taylor won this one, I'd make Amanda the favourite for the rematch.
I think Katie, as she did in the second fight with Delphine Passoon, she does show a brilliant ability to adjust.
Okay.
In the second fight. And I think, even though I had the fight with Tasha Jonas close, I had her losing in the first fight against Delphine Passoon in that very arena on the night that Anthony Joshua was knocked out by Andy Ruiz, or stopped by Andy Ruiz. I think she does adjust very well.
Okay.
And I think if it is in Ireland, I see her pipping it in a very similar fight again. But I had that same conversation with people on Sunday, Addy, and even after the fight with the likes of Tom Hauser sitting alongside me ringside, Muhammad Ali's biographer and Joe Santoliquito from Ring Magazine, Coral Barry from the BBC. We were all chatting and saying that, you know, maybe she should take an easy homecoming fight. But you say that, maybe it's Tasha Jonas in Ireland, still a difficult fight. I don't think Katie would be happy with, she's not a marketeer in boxing. She's very honest about who she wants to fight and how she wants to fight. And as she said, absolutely, let's roll it back and do it again. I think it will be Serrano, but Eddie Hearn might give her other options. He said there are other options, didn't he, afterwards? But he spoke
about Cyborg and, you know, Amanda Nunes, and no discredit to those ladies. Fantastic MMA fighters. And
too big.
Both of them.
Too big.
Too big. Too big. Far too big.
Yeah. I saw Cyborg outside.
How big does she look, by the way, at Madison Square Garden? She looked huge.
Yeah.
She must have been walking around. Yeah. I couldn't believe the size of her.
Yeah. She's probably about 12 stone. 168, 170 pounds.
Yeah. You know, she's far too big.
She's as tall as you and I. I bumped into her at the New Yorker opposite Madison Square Garden afterwards, said hello very quickly. Obviously, I know her well from the work I've done with Bellator, but and indeed with the UFC, where she was brilliant as well. But no, they're too big for her. Amanda Nunes, again, they don't have the same skills, but it's going to be, how do I put it?
Davina, it could turn into a final firefight.
Davina versus Goliata, if I can put it that way. that kind of fight. But I don't really want to see her. Because the trouble is with Katie, there comes a time in every fight against aggressive, tenacious fighters that she gets drawn into a battle. We saw it against Tasha Jonas, Southpaw.
Yeah,
saw it against Amanda Serrano on Saturday night, that she does get drawn into a battle. You know, we saw it with Delphine Passoon, who was over her like a bad rash in the first fight. So I think one more fight works. But I'm not sure that any more after that do. I think the big homecoming fight would be brilliant. But, you know, it's amazing, isn't it, that she's had her whole six-year professional career outside Ireland. And the time is right for her to have a homecoming fight before she hangs them up.
The time is right. Let's quickly give a word on both promoters. I think deserve plaudits, especially Jake Paul, who's come into this boxing world in the last few years and has taken it by storm. Obviously, Eddie is used to these big nights. Jake's done amazing with Amanda. He's done amazing with the promotion. He's just different. He's a different face. And, you know, and I like that. I like a different face, a different voice. And he's really, really almost causing a problem for some of the older promoters. And I don't mind that. He's coming in and he's shaking it up a little bit.
No, absolutely. And he showed a lot of maturity this week. I spoke to him several times. You know, he's got his own heel show that he's doing the whole
yes,
time. He doesn't
yes.
mind being booed. But he will go from villain to cult eventually in the sport, in my view. I've seen it so many times. You've seen that even people used to, you know, by the way, people used to go to see Floyd Mayweather get beaten eventually. That's what they went to go and see. But he won everyone over time through his personality. Jake Paul's a very smart operator. I give equal credit to Eddie Hearn. He did him. I mean, I remember speaking to Eddie at the weigh-in for myself and David Alorca when we were doing the William Hill show every day. And Eddie was saying that he was surprised himself. And I did find myself absolutely shocked by the magnitude of the event.
Yeah.
As time went on. And one of the little things to remember is they went on CBS's daytime morning breakfast program, Amanda Serrano and Katie Taylor. And you can't get boxers on that show. And they wowed the American audience through the respect they had for each other. I think it was on the Tuesday morning or Monday morning. And it just showed that what they can bring to the event. I thought Jake Paul, as I say, just showed a maturity to be involved. And however much people knock him, He is an addition to boxing. And I think if he stays around, and we've all said it to him, please stay around, because he is helping in an enormous way. And look at Amanda Serrano. And people won't believe this. A few fights ago, she was earning 10 grand for a fight.
Yeah.
And I believe that both women got $1 million paydays on Saturday night. And if they meet in Croke Park and they do a proper pay-per-view in this time, that could even extend to them getting... I don't know if they'll get close to eight figures, but they could get close to eight figures, or Katie could at least.
I just hope that, and look, it's a different discussion, but I really hope that Clarissa and Savannah get something similar in terms of their build-up. It needs promoting. It really needs pushing.
It does. Look, Sky are there. They've got a massive platform. They could make it a pay-per-view if they wanted to. But I think, yes, you can have it up in the Northeast. In the Northwest, you could have it up in Newcastle, but for me, that fight should go somewhere like a Manchester Arena where people will travel, or do it at the O2 Arena. Make it a big event. Make it a 20,000 crowd. Don't make it a 9,000 crowd in Newcastle. Let's make it big. One of the reasons why this fight was so big is because it was in New York, where you're on the pulse, you're on the media pulse. There's always been a media pulse around New York. People are happy to go there. 250 media at the event. They do really need to build it. And we've got the enmity between the two women in that sense. You don't often get that. So that I think it should go for a bigger venue, capital city. I'd do it in London or Manchester.
Indeed. All right, you're listening to Find Out Extra on TalkSport 2 with DAZN. Remember, stream boxing anytime, anywhere with DAZN.com. Still to come, we are going to be looking ahead to Saul Canelo Alvarez and that big fight with Dimitri Bivol, which comes up this weekend. But up next, we're going to look back on another huge fight this weekend between Oscar Valdez and Shakur Stevenson.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
star in this sport. You line them up, name them. I'm ready for whoever. I'm ready for whoever. Anybody, any of the champions. I might go collect all the belts at 130, become undisputed. I deserve to be a superstar, so this is what I got to do.
Welcome back. You are listening to Final Extra on TalkSport 2 with myself, Adi Oladipo, the great girl, Faye Davis. Big win for Shakur Stevenson on the weekend, unifying the WBC and the WBA belts after that victory over Oscar Valdez. Also, in doing that, picking up the Ring Magazine belt as well. You've spoken a lot about Shakur Stevenson in the last sort of year and a half, Gareth, saying that this guy will become, and look, it's early, but will become a great, will sort of run through the weight classes as well. Did we, on the weekend, see the start of that?
Yeah, we did. We saw a sensational performance and a dominant decision over Oscar Valdez, who he knocked down. He unified junior lightweight titles, as they call it, junior lightweight, super featherweight, I like to call it. It was at the MGM Grand. Big stage for many, many major fight nights that there have been. I've been there many times with Pacquiao and the heavyweights and Mayweather. It was his home for a long time. You know, Stevenson's clear about what he wants. He wants two other titles at 130 pounds and to become the undisputed champion, even though we know he's the number one in the division, let's be honest. But he wants the hardware. I think that's the right move. Becoming undisputed in the four belt era is a big thing now. That means WBA titleist Roger Gutierrez and IBF titleist, as you mentioned earlier, Kenichi Ogawa. But you know, the problems with those two fights are they're with rival promoters. So will Bob Arum be able to make those? He's in the right place, he's in the right position. For me, all his super fights are at lightweight at 135 pounds, 130 pounds. And Oscar Valdez is a terrific, aggressive fighter. I was there in the rain commentating for TalkSport the night he fought Scott Quigg in the tennis court in California under a tarpaulin. I've seen him up close several times, Oscar Valdez, and he's a handful.
Yeah.
He didn't look a handful to this brilliant fighter, Shakur.
No, he didn't. You're right. I mentioned at the top the size difference. Shakur just looked so much bigger than him. Like even in the clinch, Shakur was able to kind of just wrestle him around and turn him onto the ropes. And eventually he got the knockdown, which obviously Oscar complained about, but it was a clear knockdown as well. For Oscar, this is no shame. Obviously, coming off those wins against Robson Conceição and Miguel Bichel, no shame. You've lost to a guy that, you know, me and Gareth think is going to go on and maybe win belts at 135, 140, maybe even 147. So there's no shame for Oscar Valdez. For Shakur Stevenson, if he doesn't get those fights at 130, do you go straight away to 135 now? Do you just say, okay, let's just go?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, look, he's still very young. Well, one of the things about Shakur is that, I think this is, I noticed this when we were at the second Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder fight. He and Terence Crawford suddenly rocked up to just close to us at the weigh-ins where Adam Catterall and myself were working. In fact, that was the night where I kind of got Terence Crawford and Kell Brook together in a little video. Okay. I pushed them together and did a little video with them, and they were just had a little face off, and we put it out and did a big numbers. Wasn't planned. Shakur's, when you see him physically, you suddenly realize how the hell is this guy fighting at 130 pounds when he's so tall? It feels like 5'9", 5'10". He's got a long, rangy physicality. But he is still so young, he's able to make that weight. His skills in the ring are second to none. He's got the hunger. He's got all the ingredients to go on. And I think he's ready for anyone at 135. There are more risks now. I think Bob Arum will probably want to keep him, top rank probably want to keep him at 130 for another year. He's still learning things. But like you say, in that weight division, there are always disadvantages. Look, I spoke to him just recently before this fight, did a Zoom with him, I think for our show, for Fight Night. He spars regularly with Terence Crawford. So he's sparring arguably with, you know, one of the very top pound for pound anyway. And he loves it in there with Terence. And he's learning all the time. When you can compare yourself, obviously it's only gym sparring, but and it's camp sparring. When you can do that all the time, when you've got such an intelligent trainer and coach as Noisy Bomac, Brian McIntyre, he's got everything in the right place to go all the way for me up to the top of the pound for pound list.
Yeah, what I like as well, he's got this arrogance. Maybe it's an overconfidence, but I love it. I don't mind it.
He needs it. He does. Agreed.
And look, he almost apologizes for it after. I remember when he beat Jamal Herring and went into the change room after, and he apologized to Jamal Herring's wife, said, look, I apologize, but this is who I am in the lead up to a fight. After the fight, we can see he's a lot more cooler and calmer. You mentioned pound for pound there. He clearly, for me, breaks into that top 10. I don't know where. Maybe it's just at number 10. Number 10 right now is a guy called Kazuto Ioka, the current WBO champion. He's at number 10 from Japan. He passes him. Then there's Chocolatito. Then there's Josh Taylor. Where do you have him? Right at 10?
Yeah, 10, you can make a case for him being... Look, he's got incredible skills. You've got to put him in the top 10 at the moment. You know, one of the things I said, I interviewed him for Fight Night two weeks ago. And I asked him in that interview what makes him believe that he can be the number one pound for pound. What is it inside him? And he was so intelligent about it that there's so much comfort. He feels no discomfort at all in the ring. He's going to have those times when he goes into these super fights, but he just doesn't. He's like Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather put out a video this week of him still, of his grandson watching him spar.
How good did Floyd still look in that spar?
Because he's in there every day, Eddie.
Yeah.
He's never given it up. And he said, my grandson is watching me sparring or training in the gym, sparring, still, you know, shoulder roll, avoiding punches, brilliant reflexes, countering with that right, the hook, the jab. He said, and I'm grateful to my grandson's great-granddaddy for teaching me all these things from the age of five. And I think Shakur is exactly of that mold, you know, and I don't want to overemphasize it, but he really does have skills that he really is the guy that's going to be commanding all the attention when these heavyweights, this current era of heavyweights have gone, and when this lightweight division, for me, takes over. In boxing, and after we've had Terence Crawford and Errol Spence at welterweight, you know, a unified title at welterweight, because they'll both go up to the probably light middle at that point. But, you know, it's, or they'll fight each other again. But he's very special. And anyone listening to this, go and have a look at him. Go and have a look on YouTube and go and look at the things he does. And like you say, he's got this alter ego. And what he does with it is he switches on. He just switches on. He's built for this. He's so built for it.
You know what's crazy? Just as we wrap, we'll talk about Canelo after the race. What's crazy is that I remember when he was with Andre Ward and he was going to fight Josh Warrington a year and a bit ago. And that's crazy to think what he... Look, I like Josh, but that would have been a painful night for Josh Warrington. It really would have been.
I was there the night in... I think it was Los Angeles when Million Dollar Crawler, Anthony Crawler, fought Vasyl Lomachenko. And he took the fight, you know? And it was a very, very tough fight for him. And I think it would have been very similar. Josh Warrington against Shakur, you know?
Certainly would have. All right, you're listening to Fight Extra on TalkSport 2. Next up, we're switching the focus to the pound-for-pound king. Canelo Alvarez returns and he takes on the light heavyweight champion, the WBA champion, Dimitri Bivol.
Dimitri!
Right hand from Canelo.
Fans came to see a Mexican showdown, a Mexican war. What they got was a masterclass from Alvarez, and they know for sure now who the star of Mexico is.
Welcome back. You're listening to Fight Extra on TalkSport 2. Myself, Adi Oladipo, great Gareth A. Davis as well. The great Canelo Alvarez returns to the light heavyweight division this weekend to challenge the WBA title against the undefeated champion Dimitri Bivol. Let's look ahead to that fight in partnership with DAZN.
Big Fight Roundup on TalkSport 2 with DAZN. Stream boxing anytime, anywhere with DAZN.com.
Gareth.
Yes.
He is back. The pound for pound king, Canelo Alvarez, moving up in weight class again. And this time to take on an unbeaten Dimitri Bivol. Very different to when he took on Sergey Kovalev, because I thought Kovalev at the time was almost done. I remember watching the Anthony Yard fight and thinking Yard was a punch away from getting rid of Kovalev. This is different. This is a fresh Dimitri Bivol. This is the guy that hasn't been beaten. This is the guy that looks a bit bulkier as well. I've seen the preview videos. He's coming to win. He's not coming for a payday, as Canelo likes to say. He's getting that, but he's also coming to try and get the scalp of Canelo as well.
Well, I think the thing is about Dimitri Bivol, he's a very clever fighter. He's a natural light heavyweight, 12 stone seven fighter. It doesn't boil down or you know, to get to that weight. Incredible amateur pedigree. He's done everything in the sport. He's never had a major light shining moment. And the pressure this week may tell on him. Because I think Canelo, you know, like great fighters before him, beats a lot of people before they even step into the ring, Addy. And I think that's the major risk for him in this fight. I mean, stylistically, it's going to be a great fight. Canelo's so patient now. He goes into a fight. Bivol is not an aggressive fighter. He can be, but he's a very technical fighter. And I think it's going to be a very interesting chess match. But if Bivol lands with power on Canelo, Canelo's really going to feel it. But have you noticed all the videos they've been putting out about Canelo, the ones where he's slipping and sliding in the pocket and moving at that head movement, that the big bag where he's practicing moving? He is going to be a little more elusive in the pocket in this fight, whereas, you know, he loaded up in his last couple of performances, didn't he? He knew he could load up against Billy Joe Saunders.
Yeah.
He knew he could load up
against Caleb Plant as well.
Against Caleb Plant, and he did really load up in that fight. I think we could see a masterclass here, but we could well see a real battle if he can draw Bivol into it.
Based on that, sorry to cut across you there, Gareth, based on what you just said there, is this his toughest fight since Gennady Golovkin too, like in terms of names? And like, obviously Jacobs was there, and you mentioned Caleb Plant, Billy Joe Saunders, Callum Smith, obviously Avni Yildirim chucked in there as well. But is this the toughest one then?
I think it is. I mean, it's the most challenging, you'd have to say, because it's a genuine light heavyweight fight. I think you were sensible not to take Artur Beterbiev.
Yes.
I think that, you know, you know, if he really shows that he can live. Look, Mike Tyson was 5'10 and a half and fought at heavyweight, you know, 5'10 and a half, 5'11 and fought at heavyweight. If he can best Bivol in a very clever way and be elusive and be really on his game and on his mark, and I think he is in that purple patch where he can do no wrong, we may even see him step up to cruiserweight, you know.
Wow.
If he beats Bivol.
Well, wasn't he? He was going to fight Makabu, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was a little bit of a... I think they stuck it out there and there wasn't that much interest in it. People thought Makabu was so open stylistically that I think... And quite vulnerable to the knockout. You know, real kind of aggressive fight himself. I don't think they saw that as someone that would truly add to his legacy, if you like. Maybe legacy in terms of going up to that, what is it, fifth weight division?
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think, you know, I mean, it sounds mad, but I wouldn't mind seeing him in the UK against someone like Lawrence Okolie. You know.
I thought you was going to go even madder there. I thought you were going to say Usyk coming down in weight.
Wow.
I thought that's what you was going to say. I really thought you was going to tell me Usyk versus Canelo.
If Usyk can get back down to 200 pounds.
Yes.
Wow, that would that Wow, that's a great fight. In a really weird way, that's a great fight. That's the ultimate fight for him. Obviously, the other heavyweights are too big.
But
for him to... But if he could beat the former or the current heavyweight champion at 200 pounds, notwithstanding what's going to happen when and if that is ever announced, the second fight between Anthony Joshua and Tyson Fury. I mean,
if that were to happen, then we need to have an all-time great discussion.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there has to be.
He's in it. If he could beat Usyk, that might be a step too far, but
surely. Even for him, surely.
Yeah. Problem is the range, you know. Yeah. You know, it's very, very difficult.
That would be something. Any stadium in the world taking that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In the world. Providing it gets past this one on the weekend, it is Gennady Golovkin in September. Do you want Gennady Golovkin in September?
Yeah, I do. I do want a third fight. I think we saw enough from Golovkin against Ryota Murata. Bumped into Tom Loeffler. I don't know if you saw him in New York. Had a good chat to him about Gennady, his manager, of course. Tom's very keen on the fight in September, but let's see what happens with Canelo this weekend, first of all. But yeah, it's a big one. You know, I was at the other two. Gennady Golovkin and Canelo 1 and 2. I know that Gennady won the first fight. You know, clearly won the first fight, but I think he'd be up for a third fight. And I think it's a difficult one. It'd probably be at super middle, I imagine, not middle.
It has to be.
But they don't need belts. They don't need belts. They just need a weight. It's as simple as that. And I think it would be Gennady's last fight. But yeah, I think the problem is Canelo's come on so much and, you know, life begins at 40, but the greatest boxing careers don't, unfortunately. So he's at the big 4-0 now. So it's a big ask for him, but it's a massive event. And you never know with Gennady. He's got freakish power. The problem is, I don't think he takes shots to the body himself well anymore. Yeah. So that could be the biggest issue. And we know that Canelo's got horrific, kind of hellacious body shots. So, We live and learn, and we wait to see the outcome on Saturday night, first of all, with Canelo and Bivol, first of all. You know?
Yeah, just some news, obviously, that broke a few hours ago as well. Disappointing for the heavyweight fans. Hrgović won't be fighting on the card anymore. He's had to withdraw from that final IBF eliminator. He's been trying to get someone in the ring for the last year. He finally gets an opponent in Zhang Jili, and he's out, Hrgović. Obviously, personal reasons as to why he's out, but that's disappointing. I believe that was going to go as co-main as well. I think Montana Lovner drops up to co-main, but disappointing. Yeah. But nonetheless, the big story is about whether or not Canelo can win a title at 175 pounds. Gav, if you are going to give me a prediction for the fight, are you going points? Are you going Canelo to get a stoppage, which would be a hell of a statement? What are you going for?
Yeah, and also adding to that, by the way, Flip Hrgović being one of the great heavyweights, rising heavyweights, Zach Parker and Demetrius Andrade is off as well.
Yes.
Demetrius Andrade having an injury, just to add to a bit of the news there, that's only happened overnight as well. I think Canelo on points.
Okay.
But you know, you never know in this fight. But
I'm going for the upset.
Are you?
I'm going for the upset with my eyes, but Canelo will get the hand raised.
Controversial victory by split points decision for Canelo then. Like I said to you, Katie Taylor and Serrano might be a controversial split points decision.
You did call it. You did call it, Gareth A. Davis. All right, that was a look ahead to this weekend's action in partnership with DAZN. Remember, stream boxing anytime, anywhere on DAZN.com. And this has been a fantastic Final Extra on TalkSport 2. Big thanks to Gareth A. Davis as well, who can now pop off and go back to bed, who's just flown in from New York just for this on time. I'm in Vegas looking forward to the big one on the weekend. So no doubt next week, Tuesday, we'll have another absolutely cracking show for you as well.
That's it for this week. Thank you so much for downloading our Fight Night Extra. Remember, we're back every single Tuesday for more great content. And if you miss us, make sure you subscribe to Fight Night to catch up on all our other episodes.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping
and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.